Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, a massive summer of sport is happening right now, much to do with us playing catch-up with events that didn't happen last year. The Olympics are on, and now that the dust has settled a bit on the outcome and the aftermath of the Euros, one event that has been a little bit forgotten is the unexpected pitch invasion 2 weeks ago by the attention seeker of Wembley. And of course, it's not the first unexpected interruption at a major sporting event. Earlier this month, a fan was ejected from the Scottish Open Golf Championships after removing a club from Rory McIlroy's bag. Not sure you saw it, but the spectator walked up to McIlroy in the 10th tee at the European Tour event before he removed a club from his bag. And of course, the Tour de France finished last weekend, but there was a bit of a disaster early in the event when a spectator and her sign caused one of the worst crashes in recent Tour history. Now, we all love live sport because you never know what's going to happen. Interruptions like this can be fun to watch from a spectator point of view, but they can also cause havoc. Damien O'Mara, RT Sport person, in other words, he's back with us now to chat about some of the more memorable sporting interruptions. So Damien, welcome back to the programme. First of all, tell us what exactly happened to the Tour de France and why did it make such a splash in the news?
Yeah, so we're in the middle of what's a fairly frenetic summer of sport, and I don't think we fully appreciate just how big a cultural entity the Tour de France is. So opening weekend of the Tour, massive build-up, massive expectation, pictures of France, beautiful imagery sent around the world, and the third stage of the race marred completely when, as you mentioned, a female spectator who was standing on the side of the road holding a sign which was half in French, half in German, basically wasn't watching from the direction the race was coming in, was faced at the TV cameras that were trying to catch the riders, completely got blindsided by the peloton, took Tony Martin, one of the cyclists, out of it. And then by some measure, I think the figure that's been widely thrown around is she took 32 of the peloton down, because obviously Tony Martin, the cyclist, couldn't move out of her way, and she was completely ignorant to the fact that there was 150-odd cyclists coming her way and completely caused carnage. And the fallout has been pretty significant, because not only is it a bit embarrassing for the Tour, obviously, to have pictures of this massive pileup travelling around the world, but it ended up in somewhat of a, I was going to say manhunt, but a woman hunt, because the authorities were quite keen to prosecute and to chase her up afterwards.
What about one of the most dramatic and one of the most horrific, Monica Seles?
Yeah, and this is one that I often wonder if Monica Seles, people don't appreciate just how short her career actually was. And she was, you know, a real starlet, came through in her late teens, was pushing Steffi Graf for the number one position in the world. 1993, she's taking part in an event in Hamburg. She's on the verge of replacing Graf as the official greatest player in the world at the time, taking part in a quarterfinal of a fairly significant tournament, as you would expect with players of her standards, at a drinks break, when all of a sudden, I think the only way to describe it is a deranged fan of Steffi Graf manages to get out of the stand onto the side of the court and stabbed her in the back. And the remarkable thing about this is, thankfully, she made a full physical recovery. Like, it played out live on television as the world watched Monica Seles being stabbed. And the almost, it's such a tragic event, but almost the saving of it for her was she moved almost at the instance that the guy was about to stab her. So she got stabbed between the spine and her left shoulder blade, caused massive physical injuries. But I think experts, medics at the time said, had she not moved ever so slightly at the right time, she probably would have been paralysed.
OK, that's Monica Seles, that's tennis. Let's just go back for a second here to Tour de France. I wanted to ask you, do you think, but the way you said it there about the woman hunt, as you called it, was the reaction a bit excessive maybe, with the French effectively staging a major hunt for the woman for over a week?
I think it's a reminder of just how big the Tour de France is in French life. And I think, you know, we've been lucky with sports events here over the years that, you know, the Rally of Ireland or some of the golfing events that have taken place, the British Open up at Portrush, that it sent beautiful pictures of Ireland around the world. Well, the French on a yearly basis have the Tour de France, which is beamed worldwide. I think it probably does more for the country than any other marketing campaign possibly could. It's a massive marketing tool for them. But I think as well, it's a massive cultural entity. It's on the go over 100 years. It's one of those things for which France is probably best known around the world. They're very, very protective of it, particularly in recent years, that, you know, we don't need to go back over the controversies that the Tour de France had to endure in the 90s and the early noughties, I think there would be a perception in France that they've cleaned the race up. It's this massive part of French society, massive part of French culture, and now do not mess with the Tour de France.
OK, well, I'll give you a bit as to when it happened just a little while ago.
That's classified, and that is the finish climb, the Côte de Forcel loop, and that is going to be, a huge crash at the side of the road. I don't know what happened there, but everyone has come down. The entire peloton has crashed. I don't know what happened, whether it was a rider at the front or something. One rider hit a fan, I think, at the side of the road, Tony Martin, and the entire peloton has crashed.
Damien, can I say actually that the Tour itself, just to stay with the cycling, it's one of the most famous events to have been interrupted by the participants themselves. Isn't that true?
Yeah, the 1998 Tour, which people might remember, actually started in Dublin. It's possibly the most controversial of the Tours. It's remembered as the Tour de Dopage. And basically, as the Tour was making its way from Ireland back to France, one of the backroom staff was basically found with quite a considerable amount of illegal drugs in his possession. So the opening couple of stages, it did a time trial in Dublin, did a flat stage in Dublin, then went from Enniscorthy to Cork before heading back to France. And it was almost, in a way, it was the Tour de France that let the cat out of the bag in terms of exposing the level to which, not only that there was doping, but that there was quite an organised sense of doping. So the organisers, it was almost a case of trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube after it, you know, being sprayed everywhere. But the organisers tried to clamp down in the middle of the race on the level of medical checks and the basically how closely they monitored the physical aspect of the riders, to the extent that the riders got the huff. And having done the opening three stages, the prologue and the opening two stages in Dublin, they eventually made their way to the 12th stage of the race, which was just under 2 weeks in. The riders decided, we've had enough. The race was scheduled to start at a certain time of the morning. The riders said, no, we're not having it, lads. And they basically sat down for 2 hours and staged a two-hour sit-in before the stage was meant to start, which obviously is massively embarrassing to the organisers, because you've got TV stations across the world are looking to take the Tour live. It gets delayed by 2 hours, and the organisers in turn had to shorten the stage in order to kind of counteract the time that they had lost. But it's probably one of the most dramatic protests by athletes themselves.
Well, speaking of which, it's not the first sporting event to face an unexpected and unusual interruption, and it's an area where Ireland has a bit of, let's call it, unwanted form, isn't it?
Yeah, and you kind of think of all the great sporting names that we've sent worldwide and all the great achievements that we've had, that it's arguably a priest called Neil Horan who's had the longest aspect of attention for unwanted memories for Ireland at famous sporting events. And there's really a litany of stuff here that we can go through. And I think, you know, we have to be fair to him as well. I think he was dealing with a lot of issues at the time in his life, but he wanted to use major sporting spectacles as an opportunity to spread the message of God as he saw it. I think the most notable one, and almost in a way the most frightening of them all, 2003, when he made it onto the track at Silverstone during the British Grand Prix. And if you're into Formula One and you know Silverstone, the iconic track, there's the hangar straight where cars at the minute, well, at the time, they could get up to top speeds of in or around 320 kilometres an hour. So you think of, you know, just how fast they're going. He managed to get onto the track. Remarkably, the cars managed to swerve to avoid him. The safety car then had to be deployed to stop the race before a marshal managed to tackle him to the ground. And he was, for what was kind of the first of his interruptions with sport, he was eventually imprisoned for 2 months.
We've got a lunatic on the track down the hangar straight, 160 miles an hour the cars are doing as they come through there. Safety car out, of course. The drivers, oh my word, that is absolutely unbelievable.
The drivers giving them as wide a berth as they can, just swerving out of the way. What on earth are you doing? Luckily then the marshals have got to him now. Safety car deployed. And outrageous.
Okay, well, while he was at the extreme end of the scale, he's not the only man who made a name for himself by storming major events, is he?
Yeah, Dave, you've never felt the need to either streak or stage a prank at a major sporting event,
no,
I presume?
No, I never have. No, I mean, no. Sometimes I've shouted at the television. I mean, like I'll tell you, Thierry Henry 2009, that's enough.
Okay, but at least you stayed fully clothed in your own sitting room.
I did.
There's almost a cottage industry of pranksters, all of whom seem to be from the northwest of England, who've made a career for themselves by interrupting sporting events. So Carl Power, I'll go through one or two of them in quick succession. Carl Power, English guy back in the 90s, who made a massive name for himself by inadvertently positioning himself at the centre of very major sporting events. So one of the ones that stands out, there's a brilliant team picture of Manchester United before they played a Champions League game away to Bayern Munich, where the team are there in their away kit, full kit, get ready for the team photo, when all of a sudden this fella just lands at the end of the back row of the team photo, and there's a brilliant picture of the only player at the point who realises that there's 12 of them in the picture rather than 11 is Roy Keane, who's at the opposite end of the back row. And if looks could kill, Carl Power would not have gone on to have done many more events. He managed to storm centre court at Wimbledon, brought a friend of his along on that occasion, where the two of them managed to have a knockabout over the net at centre court. A lot safer than Neil Horan, Carl Power managed to get on the podium in a full race suit at the British Grand Prix just before the presentation of the prizes. And for all the people who have grown up looking to bat for England in cricket, I think he invaded Headingley and Lords and many places on many occasions where they would announce who's about to come out to bat, and then all of a sudden this mildly rotund and quite obviously not a elite sportsman came out in full gear ready to
go. Okay, you mentioned streaking earlier on. Tell me about Mark Roberts.
Yeah, who to be honest with you, he is someone who would have been in my consciousness many years ago when he was interrupting sporting events. I presumed he had consigned his streaking to retirement, but I was looking at his website where it's still live, and I think you could almost try and persuade him to upset a couple of events. So this is the guy who, and I don't know how he managed to pull this off, managed to sneak onto the pitch of the second half of the Super Bowl back in 2004, where he managed to dance wearing just a thong. There's an image for you. After sneaking onto the pitch dressed as a referee. Now, you would think that the Super Bowl in 2004 would have had the security of all security, but he managed to achieve that. He also disrupted, he halted play at the World Snooker Championship by storming the Crucible at one stage. He's been at Wembley more times than, you know, many players of his age, or elite players. There's quite an interesting one at Wimbledon where, if you remember, Kournikova, who was like the big, you know, poster girl for tennis back in the day, did an ad for the Super Bra, where the tagline was it's only the balls that bounce. Well, during one of her doubles matches in Wimbledon back some time ago, he managed to again get onto centre court wearing just a thong, with the phrase "it's only the balls that bounce," you know, written across his body. So he's been there. He's even managed to get the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. So he's quite the man.
Right, and it was a thong both times, not even a mankini. Okay, tell me about James Miller.
Oh yeah, so this one is brilliant. So we've obviously had a situation where, particularly in the States, we've seen big fight nights which have taken over American football stadia. And you know, I've never had the pleasure of being at one of them, but I'm often wondering, if you're sitting up the back of a 100,000-seater stadium, you'd be as well off watching it at home on television. But James Miller, he was known as the Fan Man, was an American parachutist who decided to take advantage of this. And ahead of Evander Holyfield's bout with Riddick Bowe, he managed to parachute into Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas with a kind of a slightly motorized parachute. So, you know, did really well. I think a lot of people that were at it thought it was part of the pre-fight build-up until he slightly lost control of the parachute. And instead of landing gracefully in the ring, he basically crashed into the side of it. And again, the footage is on YouTube. He gets beaten to within an inch of his life by security. He was knocked unconscious. And then, as I think a lot of people would have done at the time, while he's getting seven shades of you-know-what kicked out of him by security, fans around him are tearing the parachute apart and then subsequently sold chunks of it on eBay.
Actually, there was one at the beginning of the Euros as well, of course, and they hit that wire that goes across the pitch where the camera's up in the air. But here, I'll give you the bit that you were talking about there of this one here, the parachutist, and back then.
Probably as a preventive measure. And, somebody just... There's been a parachutist, a skydiver, has just landed here at ringside.
tried to come into the ring. He hit the ring ropes, and there is chaos here at Caesar's Palace in the outdoor stadium. And time has been called as some maniac has attempted to parachute here. A skydiver or a parachutist tried to land in the ring. We are in the seventh round of this fight. He landed on the ring apron, crashed into the ropes, and now security is all over him along with the people at ringside.
At ringside, indeed. Okay, animals, Damien. Any kangaroos?
Yeah, well, I can fly through these because who loves nothing more than an animal interrupting sport? Skippy, you know, he was our childhood hero on television for many of us. You wouldn't think of the trouble he can cause.
The bush kangaroo.
There you go. They're 10 a penny in Australia. So we've had situations where one very prolonged break took place in the A-League in soccer where a kangaroo made it onto the pitch, managed to get into the goal, and then they couldn't get him out of the net. There's also been multiple golfing events in Australia have been affected by kangaroos. The PGA Tour in golf in the States regularly have to halt play because of alligators and crocodiles. Again, there's multiple clips of that on YouTube. Thankfully, they don't manage to travel quite as fast as a kangaroo, so you'd be able to avoid them if you needed to be. The one that I find funniest is, you know, like we're in the height of summer and you get midges and whatever else that start to attack you. Well, the Yankees in baseball left pretty significantly counting the cost of that back in 2007, facing the Cleveland Indians up by a run to nil towards the end of the American League final, which is massive in baseball in the States. One of their players, Joba Chamberlain, got attacked by midges to the extent that he gave away a run. He couldn't concentrate on the play that was going on around him. Match went to an extra inning. The Indians ended up beating the Yankees and knocked him out of the series.
Do you know, so, I remember something. Do you remember in the final when Portugal won the Euros about 5 years ago, and there was all these little flying bats going all over the place, and Ronaldo was getting really into little flying bats. That made it sound a bit better. Hold on, of all the things you mentioned, I want to give you a kangaroo. That's what I'm getting to.
Yeah, double the lead. Oh, no.
And the kangaroo is on the field of play again.
Oh, my God.
And racing across the field of play, scattering players left and right, bearing down on goal.
The goal isn't in his sunbathing spot. He won't be happy.
And back where he was half an hour ago.
OK, Damien, we don't get kangaroos here. Do we get dogs on the pitches these days much?
One of the most iconic pieces of commentary that you can find in the RTE radio archive is Micheál and Murra Hurtig commentating on a dog in Croke Park. And not like a greyhound. Micheál would be into his greyhounds. But basically, it seemed for a while where dogs invading inter-county GAA games were 10 a penny. So it's been quite some time since we've had a dog invade Croke Park. So perhaps that might be a challenge for me at some stage over the course of the championship season.
I'm going to give you a blast of this, a kind of a dogs on pitch compilation, I'll call it.
3 points, Australia. There's a dog on the ground. It's got Emily. There's a dog out on the ground as well. Can you believe this? Oh, Murray. What else is going to happen here today?
There we see a 16th player on the field.
Well, it couldn't be a Munster final or a provincial final without a dog on the pitch. And at the moment, he's trying to track the run of Brian O'Regan.
In the meantime, this dog's still on the ground. Picked up now by Lockhart. Helping. Leaves it up in the air for a long time. Del Cedo was able to play the crunching tackle. He's Dyrek again. Beautiful skills over to Del Cedo. Run down by Brosnan was good play. And Ireland on the last one. Somebody get the dog off, for God's sake.
Okay. Well, finally, there's one kind of funny one in some ways of just interruptions of sport, which is what we're talking about here, to Damien O'Mara from Sports and RT. Damien, Steffi Graf, tell me about that, and where was she?
So again, in the midst of Wimbledon, which you would consider, you know, Pims and strawberries and cream, and it's the best of behaviour. So poor Steffi Graf trying to concentrate on winning a Grand Slam in tennis when all of a sudden, obviously quite a impassioned fan of hers from the stands asks her to marry him. And her response is, to be fair, she's obviously a woman with a good sense of humour because she's quick off the mark, if you've got the clip there.
A bit muffled. What did she say?
How much money do you have? Oh, right, so that's okay, Steffi Graf, who's I'm looking at it here in front of me. Her total prize money earned in her career is just short of $22 million. But even if you've got $22 million, in the background, you want to make sure that marriage comes with a good dowry.
Absolutely, indeed. Good man yourself, Damien. Damien O'Mara. Thanks a million, Damien. Good luck. Take it easy.
Thanks, Dave.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.